General Gordon turned from the window through which he had been staring across the river at the enemy emplacements. He stared at Penrod with that disconcerting blue gaze as he saluted. "At ease, Captain. I believe you made the journey from Cairo in record time," he said. How did he know that? Penrod wondered. And then it was obvious. We have the boasting of the fearless Jacob to thank. In silence, General Gordon listened to his report and the messages he had brought from Sir Evelyn. When he had finished speaking, Gordon did not reply immediately. He paced up and down the long room, finally stopping to stare at the large-scale map of the Sudan that was spread on the table under the windows. The view from them was unrestricted. The glass panes had been blown out by shrapnel from the Dervish artillery across the river, but Gordon had taken no steps to fortify his headquarters or to protect his person. He seemed to be concerned only for the safety of the city and the well-being of its people. "I suppose we must be grateful to the Prime Minister for coming to the rescue of the populace, even though he is several months too late," he remarked at last. Then he looked up at Penrod. "The only consolation for me is that now I have at least one British officer on my staff." At those words, Penrod felt the first chill breeze of unease blow down his spine. "My orders from General Stuart, sir, are to return to Wadi Halfa as soon as I have delivered my dispatches to you. I am seconded to the new Camel Corps with orders to assist in guiding them across the loop of the Nile to the assault upon Matema." Gordon thought about that for a moment, then shook his head. "If General Stuart has not yet left Wadi Halfa, it would be months before he reaches Matema. You will be more useful here than sitting at Wadi Halfa. Besides, there must be hundreds of other guides qualified to bring the Camel Corps across the loop. When the rescue column reaches Abu Hamed, I shall reconsider, but in the meantime, I need you here." He said it with such finality that Penrod knew argument was futile. His dreams of action and glory were shattered. Instead of riding into the city at the head of his corps, after fighting his way up from Matema, he was now sentenced to the dreary monotony of the siege. "I must bide my time and choose my moment," he decided, and did not let his expression betray his true feelings. "It would be an honour to serve under you, General, but I would appreciate having those orders in writing." "You shall have them," Gordon promised. "But now I must bring you up to date with the situation here, and our immediate and most pressing problems. Take a seat, Ballantyne." Gordon spoke quickly, almost with agitation, flitting from subject to subject, chain-smoking cigarettes from a silver case. Slowly Penrod began to understand the enormous strain under which he had been working, and to gain an inkling of the terrible loneliness of this command. He sensed that before his arrival there had been nobody Gordon could trust to share with him some of the burden. If Penrod was not an equal in rank, at least he was an officer of a first-line British regiment, and as such was worth a dower full of Egyptian staff officers. "You see, Ballantyne, I have here the responsibility and duty without full control. I am daily afflicted not only by the incompetence of the Egyptian officers, but by their inconscionable behaviour and total lack of morality or sense of duty. They willfully disobey orders if they think they can escape the consequences. They neglect their duties and spend most of their time with their concubines. Unless I chivy them, they seldom bother to visit the front-line defences. I am aware that they conspire and intrigue with the Dervish in the hope that they may win advantage when the city falls, which they are convinced it will. They steal from their own men, the troops fall asleep at their posts, and in their turn steal from the populace. I suspect that large quantities of durra have been stolen from the granary. The women and children of the city spit at me and revile me in the streets when I am forced to reduce the rations yet again. We are now down to a cupful of grain per person per day." He lit another cigarette, and the flame of the match fluttered in his cupped hands. He puffed rapidly, then smiled coldly at Penrod. "So you can imagine that your assistance will be welcome. That is especially true, since you are so well acquainted with the layout of the city." "Of course you may rely on me, General." Despite his cold, almost messianic gaze, Penrod wondered how close Gordon was to breaking point. "I'm going to delegate to you the following responsibilities at the outset. Until now, Major Al-Farouk has been in charge of the storage and distribution of food. His efforts have been, at best, pathetically inadequate. I suspect, though I cannot prove it, that he knows something of the missing grain. You will take over from him immediately. I want you to let me have an inventory of all the available supplies as soon as possible. Under the rule of martial law, you have the power of seizure. You may commandeer any stores you need. Any transgressions are to be treated with the utmost severity. You may flog or shoot looters and black marketeers without reference to me. The troops and the populace must be forced to accept the unpleasant laws. You will make them fully aware that the alternatives are even worse. Do you understand that? Of course, General. Do you know a Ryder Courtney? Only in passing, sir. He is a trader and merchant of this city. I was obliged to requisition a shipment of his durra. As a mercenary, without an altruistic bone in his body, he resents it. He has his own compound within the city and behaves as though he is independent of all authority. I want you to make the true position clear to him. I understand, sir, said Penrod, and thought sourly. So now I am no longer an hussar, but a policeman and a quartermaster. Gordon was watching his expression and saw the reaction, but he went on unruffled. Among other enterprises, he owns and operates a large river steamer. At present it is undergoing repairs in his workshop. Once it is serviceable again, it will be useful in future military operations and possible evacuation of our populace, should Stuart's column fail to arrive in time. Courtney also has horses and camels, and much else that will be vital to us as the dervish noose tightens around us. Gordon stood up as a signal that the meeting was at an end. Find out what he's up to, and what he knows of the missing durra, Ballantyne. Then report back to me.